Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, today I have Patrick Geddes on the line, and he's author of Transparent Investing, and he's also co-founder and former CEO of Aperio Group. Patrick, welcome to the show.
It's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you.
All right, Patrick. So for everybody that's been listening to this show for a long time, you know I love bringing authors on and you know I love promoting books. I'm excited to talk about transparent investing and really some of the reasonings behind why you wrote this book and why the message is so important. But before we get started with that, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all with our Mission Matters Minute. So, Patrick, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Patrick, what mission matters to you?
So I'll divide that into a couple pieces, the mission for the company and then the mission for the book. So we started Aperio Group because we wanted to build an honest, consumer-focused firm built around indexing and wanted to run it based entirely on telling the truth. That's the company name is the Latin for to make clear, reveal the truth. And then we operated it that way until we were sold in 2021. And the book kind of grew out of that same mission where in 2006, there was a magazine article published about the history of indexing, which started in San Francisco. And about a third of the article was on our firm. And we got, I believe it was a total of over 700 phone calls coming in for people looking for wealth management, which we didn't really do. And it was unfortunate we had to tell people we're really just stock managers. And yet we felt so bad that we ended up doing a free course for people who called in. And then the material for that is what ended up getting turned into the book. And my mission on the book was, one, I got to give something back because I've been treated so well that company ended up getting a lot bigger than I ever would have predicted. And so it was kind of my repayment to some generosity from the universe, but it's also a kind of a consumer advocacy. My mission on that book is to get out and get people to wake up and smell the coffee about the investment industry.
Wow. What an amazing mission. And for those, again, that have been listening to this for a long time, they know my background as in investing and also as an advisor working in the trenches with my clients. So I'm excited to get into the idea behind this transparent investing and really creating a company, like you mentioned, that's on the side of the investor. I'm curious, so where did all this start? Like the idea for Aperio Group and really creating that type of firm, like where was that moment or what was that progression?
So that started when I met my co-founder, a fellow by the name of Paul Foley. Actually, he found me and I was really not an entrepreneur. He thinks that's silly. What I mean by that is when he said, you know, we could start a company, my reaction was, you can do that? So from his perspective, he was very much an entrepreneur, creative. For me, my motivation was I really liked finance and the investment industry. And yet I thought I cannot work anywhere where I'm not allowed to tell the truth. And I thought, okay, that gets rid of about 98-99% of all firms out there. Because if you really told clients, investors, the full truth of what you can and can't do, it's much harder to maintain business. So the origin of the company really came out of an entrepreneur meeting someone who was myself, who was so kind of fastidious and fussy about the truth that it was only going to work if we were doing it with our own firm.
Interesting. So you get this idea. It's time to launch. Like as you were thinking about, I guess here's where I'm going with this one. A lot of people have good ideas to do good, especially in finance. Not always the easiest thing to go from idea to inception to then allow the market to actually, whether it's, you know, behind the scenes there at the street or, you know, institutional side or it's the people funding it, or it's even the investors that can't believe that this exists. Like talk to me a little bit about this journey, please.
Sure. So we started the firm in 1999 and looked around at both very committed to indexing and looked around at like, well, we're not going to do anything that the big indexers can't do themselves, like a Vanguard or, you know, State Street or BlackRock. So we looked at a kind of a customized version of indexing that was focused very much on the ultra high net worth. And so it was very hard to get traction early on to build the connections and the trust. My co-founder and some other partners that joined early, they were the ones who really made those connections through networking. That was not my strength. So I was fortuitous on that score. And then the concept of, especially the tax advantage from what's often called tax loss harvesting, can actually be really worthwhile for very high income people in certain situations. And that did capture people's attention. There were other firms already doing it. And so we did well enough to get through the 08-09 meltdown and survive that. And then suddenly indexing, which had been doing well, absolutely took off and just went crazy, as people, I think, were appropriately kind of cynical and a little bitter about some of the promises from the investment industry. And so we rode that wave up of indexing in general, but also an increased focus on the after-tax side, on customization. We were one of the real leaders in creating what you could call a kind of customized indexing. And then, lo and behold, by about 2020, that is suddenly so hot an area within the investment world that all the big firms had to pounce on it and started acquiring shops that offered that kind of thing. So were we smart? We did certain things right, but boy, a lot of success comes from standing in the right place at the right time. And we just happened to be right in front of this great wave, and that carried us quite a long way.
Yeah. When I think about just that whole, I mean, my career just where I started. So when you say 08, I was at the Vanguard Group, and I was taking those calls on indexing and otherwise. So, you know, big indexer, and really just learning at that point. I'm just getting licensed when I was in the business. So that'd be 2008. And my first day at the Vanguard Group was the height of the market in 2008. I mean, if you look at a chart, I'm talking about, I don't even remember the date, but anytime I want to find it, I just look at a chart. The exact date was my first day of work, and the market went down every day from that point.
Where did I find myself?
Yeah, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, right? Yeah, that's. And then the funny thing is that my experience with the market before then was actually when I was in high school working at Raymond James. And so in 98, that would be in 98, and the market was flying high. And I'm thinking, oh, all you have to do is you just put money in the till and you make money. This is amazing. Anything that says .com, right? So then you walk away, go to college, come back, and what happened? Everything was fine when I left you guys, right? So now looking at what your work and what you did there, what I see it as is it was really the progression of some of the other, let's just say, indexing concepts that were out there previous, and the ones that were designed for your everyday investor at that point. And now what you did was, well, at least the first market that you went after or you helped or provided value would be the ultra high net worth market. Now, if I know that market, which that's really where I stopped working before I ended my career there, they probably were not the easiest to teach about indexing or even custom indexing either, because if everybody else is selling them the, let's just say, the sexy new shelter or the sexy new whatever it is that's coming out, like you're battling custom indexing versus the XYZ startup in the next potential unicorn that somebody else is selling them. Like how did that conversation go?
So that was one where, for one thing, there was a self-selected group. Like one of the things we learned early on, and you could say in hindsight, we understood, but we didn't. We actually thought we have a lot of direct investors, and that didn't work out at all. We got through wealth advisors, registered investment advisors. Mm. And so it was a self-selecting process that we tended to get the ones who were much more oriented toward indexing. But the other thing that happened was we benefited from the fact that those advisors were basically getting forced by their clients, who started focusing on fees and focusing on taxes more. And the version we were doing, while it was grounded in indexing, still had all this customization around environmental social governance screen, some very sophisticated tax strategies. We would do what are called factor tilts, where you're not picking stocks, but you might pick a particular trend like growth stocks or momentum stocks. And so while there was some resistance, we did get traction in a world that was shifting that way. But it was fascinating to watch the argument or the discussions we would have when we first started were all about indexing versus active. And then as that started shifting and indexing really built momentum, even as early as like 2005, 2007, right before the meltdown, we started getting questions more like, why are you better than an index mutual fund or an ETF? And that was an interesting shift. And then by 10 years later than that, the discussion shifted to why are you better than your competitors who do something somewhat similar? In other words, they understood the basic concept. So when we first started, it was a little too new and off the radar, but there were enough people using it. And then, as I said, we just benefited from the fact that it became much more commonplace to where today, back to the mission side, what I find fascinating is I've been out, you know, pounding the pulpit on this, particularly the tax advantages of what's called tax loss harvesting for decades. And now it's actually getting oversold, I would argue, in that there are people who aren't in the right situation. They don't have a high enough income tax rate, or they don't have outside capital gains. And so this thing I helped, you know, develop and make a more commonly understood strategy is now flipped to the other direction of it's actually getting oversold in ways that it's inappropriate. And I'm just fascinated with that as having argued for so long about its benefits to now see how with the entire, so much of the industry embracing it, the industry, when you're selling stuff, like nuance is not great for closing a sale. Saying, you know, it, well, there are a lot of factors that can make this good or bad. That's way too complicated for a simple sales situation. Either it's terrific, it's the best thing since sliced bread, everybody should have it, or nope, it's terrible, and it just isn't that clear.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me a lot about how the original indexing like methodology of just the 60-40 portfolio was even developed, and how when it got too much in terms of like it became like, okay, wait a minute, we're doing too good at selling this. And then they had to think about the next layer of diversification and what international exposure looked like and all these other things, because understanding that the underlying assets, if enough people bought into the exact same, like we had some systemic and a bunch of other things beyond the concept of this conversation today, but I get it. And that's interesting to hear your realization there that the same thing can happen for a strategy in the same case. Oh, you gotta love finance, right?
Well, and this is true of many businesses, but particularly tricky. Ours is that, and then at some point, the real driver is the ethics. Like, how willing are you to tell people not to pick the highest price thing you offer that makes you the most profit? And that's always a challenge, but investing is tricky because you get that kind of information asymmetry where people in the industry may understand some of that detail better than their consumers. And it's unfortunate that it just doesn't pay as much in many situations to tell people the truth. But it also, that's what makes it fun. And that's why it was fun to come out with this book, because it's a challenging situation for investors. And how do you get them helpful advice without just simplifying it to, oh, the industry's a bunch of sharks and ripoff artists, con men and women, don't believe anything they say. That's way too cynical and skeptical, but this is an industry that peddles a lot of garbage product and is not very honest with itself or with its consumers. And that's a tricky balancing act. And that's what the book was made to address.
Yeah. And I think that's a great transition. Let's go further into the book. So Transparent Investing, How to Play the Stock Market Without Getting Played. First off, great title. I meant to tell you that. But so what was the reason? And I'll tell you where this question is coming from. So the question is, what was the reason for the book? And where this question is coming from is that I find many individuals like yourself who've had successful careers, who have, whether they exit a business or not, but in general, they just have this length of span and all of this learning and knowledge. And I find, in my opinion, and this could sound completely biased because I'm a publisher, I publish a lot of authors, but it's not. It's more so like, and that's one of our missions here, is to help other people get their message out there through podcasts, books, other things. But I find that so few individuals in your place take the time to either write the book or get a ghostwriter, just get that out there. So I guess in talking to them is where I'm asking this question. Like, what was the reason behind going the book route to get your message out there and heard?
I tried some other venues. Basically, it all came from, I made a vow about 10 or 12 years ago. Like, this is going so well, I need to repay my debt. And I vowed to repay it. The problem is, I didn't define it very carefully. And I knew it had to be something fairly major. So I thought about trying to write a book. I'd done a 50-page version for those free seminars we gave in 2007, right after the article came out that I mentioned. But the book just seemed like, even though it's a traditional kind of old-fashioned way of delivering it, it's very concrete what it is. It's a great place to combine both some narrative efforts to persuade and also to bring a lot of data and an extensive bibliography on all the research, because, you know, why should anyone take my word for this? And I also tried some other another medium. Specifically, I actually was getting some coaching by a guy who teaches solo performance as an art form, like writing and delivering solo theater. And I tried writing a play. It was called The Investment Therapist. And it was hard. And I thought I wasn't sure how well it worked. And I was reading it to the guy, and he just said, yeah, there's no energy. Like, you know, interesting idea. It's just like, I'm not getting it. What's going to make it interesting on stage? And I just looked down like, okay, in life, you got to try a lot of things. I'm going to go back to what's much more clear, which is a book. But I did also want to expand it beyond just that medium. And I created about 10 or 11 videos with just trying to explain some of the concepts, because investing can be such a dry, kind of intimidating field. It sounds very quantitative. And so I did just some weird, like satiric advertising or an animated version of the scene from The Wizard of Oz where Dorothy pulls, or Toto pulls back the curtain after the Oz has been outed, and he's saying, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, because I thought it captured the way the investment industry is trying to pretend it's a wizard when in fact it's not. And so I tried to just go a little bit beyond a book, but I tried to anchor it all around that traditional medium.
Yeah, I think, and I'm a huge fan of this, because I think that sometimes individuals have the myth, they think about a book and they may be thinking like, you know, they're promoting themselves, or they have to do this for branding or marketing, which all those things are great, by the way. I'm not saying they're not, but at the end of the day, and we all have to market, right? As business owners or otherwise, regardless, like if we want to get a message out there, we have to figure out how, and we care about it enough, I should say, to have it reach a large audience. We have to figure out what works for us, and we have to, and it's worked, just period. And so what I've just found, and where I fell in love with books, is, you know, just personally, I mean, I owe any of the success in this business or otherwise really to books. Even as an advisor, I wrote a book and I used it extensively in my marketing and other things like that. So I always did that. And I to me, it's just one of those special things and ways to connect with an audience, and it's tangible. Like, you can, whether it's digital and you're holding a Kindle or whatever you're reading on, the idea is that you can hold in your hand, it's real. And I feel like that realness gives people, I'm not saying digital's wrong. We do tons of digital on digital, that mission matters. So not worried about that, but just feeling and holding that book, it's something different to me. I don't know.
No, exactly.
What kind of response have you gotten so far? Like, just in getting out here, and I'm looking on Amazon, by the way, I see you got a ton of reviews on there, 96 reviews already. And I mean, this thing is not even been out a year yet. Like, what has been your experience so far?
So I was very pleased with the initial traction. We did hit number one bestseller at one point for a couple of the personal finance categories. And some of that was, you know, full disclosure, some of that was giving away free versions just to hit that number. Mm-hmm. And in fact, back to the mission side, I realized as I was criticizing the incentive problem for the industry that I had to address that myself. So that's why 100% of the proceeds from sale of the book, and there's also an online interactive course version, all the proceeds are going to nonprofits in consumer financial education. So it's gotten good traction. I wouldn't say it's turned into a tsunami. Like, this is not a tidal wave. There are a lot of other investment books out there. In that sense, it's a very competitive market. I don't know that anyone else is publishing, you know, without the profit motive in this space, for two sides, but the profit motive of going to write about a book so you'll buy stuff I sell, or I want to write a book so I'll, you know, earn the revenue from sales of the book itself. So it's been good. It has gotten a lot of traction. I would not describe it as a runaway success either.
So when I think about a book like this, the first thing that I was thinking about was like a Ray Dalio, like something like that. It's like he has his principles, series and things where he's obviously not doing that for money and not, right. I don't know what he does with the proceeds, by the way. I'm not saying that I know that piece of it, but either way, he's obviously not doing it for the money, right? The thing is,
right.
he has this lifetime of learning and experience that he wants to pass on to others so that they can benefit from it and that they can, you know, reap some of the rewards that in his case were learned from his, you know, decision-making process, yep. and otherwise, yep. that were gained. And so yep. on your end, I see it very similarly. When I think about your career and what I know of it is that, like, taking that custom indexing thing to the next level, that reminds me of like a Schwab or like a Bogle and some of the things that they, Bogle building on indexing, Schwab building on creating that ability for the average everyday investor to be able to access the market, and then you,
yep.
adding this other layer to it and then thinking about like what that next stage looks like through writing and otherwise. And I remember all the books that Bogle did and Schwab did that I grew up reading. To me, I see this, that same type of opportunity to, as their knowledge and all the knowledge of like the things that we're learning going in these next chapters, what, and we're recording this just for context for everybody listening to this in the future and whatnot. This would be September, you know, in September of 2022. So, you know, some things going on in the market. I guess we'll leave it at that for the moment. So looking at that and that those next steps with this book and otherwise, I guess I just have to ask you the question. So, I mean, what's next? What's next for you? What's next for, you know, your mission to get this message and this word out there? What's next?
So I am continuing to try and promote it, especially with the three components, the book, the course, and the videos. But my main goal was just to get it out there because people would ask me, like, what's a good introduction to investing? And I was always kind of lame at answering that. And now I can recommend one. But I think the twist here is, in many ways, this is a book not so much about how to invest, mm-hmm. as a book about how to be self-aware and a smart consumer. Because, mm-hmm. as I was laying out the book with my editor and mapping it, like, the punchline is, well, how do I actually do that? And that's the third of three parts. And we realized, look, the first two parts are a lot covered or well understood in most books. And that's why, mm-hmm. the first thing I talk about is how humans are wired, basically a lot on neuroscience and how the brain works. Mm-hmm. And that's because, like, why would you put that in an investing book? It's not just because behavioral finance has become a hot field, as you well know, but mm-hmm. also because I think most people don't realize how they can be the biggest challenge to their own investment success. And in terms of what I want to do in the future is really stretch that further, where investors think of themselves first as humans with let's use some technology language, some legacy software, you know, software mm-hmm. that was developed, Homo sapiens are what, about 300,000 or 400,000 years old. You know, and all of our instincts worked really well, helping us to survive on, you know, the plains of Central Africa from whence we all came. Mm-hmm. But they don't always work well in a modern, electronic, fast-paced economy and financial markets. And mm-hmm. so that piece, I think, was missing. And that's the part I think there's some growing awareness. But the other part I really want to be crusading on in future is as a kind of consumer advocate, in the sense of, you don't want to become a complete cynic about the investment industry, but we do not have your best interests at heart. You have to understand that. And the understanding that when you hear about investment advice, I always view investment advice as some version of selling. It may be a version of actual investment product. It may be the financial press that benefits from, you know, clickbait is exciting stuff going on in the market, hot tips. The actual smart investment choice can be so boring, like do the same thing year in and year out. And anyone in the financial press is going to look at that as in, well, that may be true, but I'm not going to get any clicks based on that. I'm not going to sell, you know, articles. So those are the real sort of crusading part I'm interested in focusing on in the future.
Wow. It's amazing you brought that up. Yeah, it's really aligned in what we do. I mean, just when you think about it as a media outlet, and just I'll speak from the media side of things, but just, you know, there's different outlets for different things, right? Not bashing anybody, but that whole clickbait thought process. And so at Mission Matters, our aim and our goal is really to tell like meaningful stories and to bring on mission-based individuals onto the platform. I mean, just for example, this whole like last pandemic and things like that, all the things that happened over the last couple of years, maybe I probably did like 1500 interviews, and there might be like two like actual COVID headlines. And they were just because it was like the actual headline was based on something that had to do with the science, or somebody, she stands out top of my mind would be she worked on PCR testing, but she's been doing that for like the last 10, 15 years. Like she's one of the world's more renowned in that technology. And she's been working on different applications at a university for a long time on that. And so just seeing what that was like, but just making sure that we're stewarding the platforms, the voices we have, and what we've been given to make sure that we can create these trusted sources of information, just understanding that there's always going to be another side, right? But at least providing that content so somebody else can be out there and can absorb it and just understand, hey, like this is the real deal, which is exactly what I think you've done with this book, Transparent Investing. Speaking of the book, for the audience and everybody listening to this, will be putting information on how you can get the book in the show notes, of course. Patrick, what is the best place? Should we send them to Amazon, or where should we send people to pick up a copy of this book?
Basically, wherever they buy books. So it's on Amazon. It's available through independent booksellers. You can get the Kindle version, both hard and paperback. So it's pretty much wherever you get books already.
Wonderful. And like I mentioned, I'll put that information in the show notes so that our audience can just click on it and head right on over and pick up a copy. And speaking of the audience, if this is your first time listening to a Mission Matters episode or connecting, we're all about bringing on entrepreneurs, executives, and experts and having them share their mission, the reason behind their mission, why they do what they do, and really how we can all learn and gain and benefit from it together so we all grow together from that information. If that sounds interesting or engaging or fun to you, hit that subscribe button, because we have many more mission-based individuals coming up on the line, and we don't want you to miss a thing. And now, Patrick, really, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure, sir. I really enjoyed it.